Hey guys, this is Spencer Buchanan. Thanks for listening to Confessions of a Game Dev podcast. This is the second half of that conversation we had with our special guest, Andrew Witz, and some interesting discussion on current events that have been happening in the game industry. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Just as a segue. That is my segue, but...
Good segue.
Okay, I'm good at segues.
He's the Spencer, king of segues.
Spencer is not good at segues.
Do you own a segue?
No.
You're not the king of segues.
I'm the king of verbal segues. conversational segues.
No, okay. No, Trent's really bad at segues.
Trent is terrible.
I'm mediocre.
Trent is the worst segue person ever.
You gotta meet Trent.
Does he do so, pause, different topics?
No.
He goes, it's almost like a bad pun that doesn't make sense.
And he goes, speaking of bad puns that don't make sense, Dead Space came out with DLC this
That's it. That's it. That is it.
What the hell are you talking about?
Like, they're in the middle of the thought, and they just go, so, David Cage gave a speech the other day. And it's like, we didn't even finish the thought. Anyway, sorry.
So, J.J. Abrams and Gabe Newell were talking. I think it was at DICE.
And then, like, they took it offline, off of DICE, and kept on talking.
I didn't get to read all of it. I read through a bunch of it, but... It's really interesting noticing the storytelling approaches between these two people who are integral to their mediums.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams, I don't know, you may have heard of him. He's done a couple of high-profile films lately. He may be doing, like, this Star Wars movie pretty soon.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't even want to ask you about that.
He already did a Star Trek movie, so he's doing Star Wars.
Because we'll be here forever.
I'm all good with the J.J.
Oh, are you really?
I'm fine with it.
So there's that. There's J.J. Okay, Abrams. Gabe Newell, if you follow gaming at all, you better know him. He's, you know, kind of important to Valve.
side note, he did a keynote this morning, and I saw it on Twitter, and I'm reading people, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he is saying some profound crap. And then someone posted a live stream, so I'm watching it, and I'm like, guys, Gabe Newell's talking right now, and he's saying some really interesting stuff. There's about 8 people in the studio, and they go, who's Gabe Newell?
Oh!
And I said,
I hate these people!
I said, every single person in that room did not know who Gabe Newell was, including Ash.
You didn't know who Gabe Newell was?
No, I knew.
Gaben?
And I was livid. And Amy's Gaben. Like, people just have different bases of knowledge than you do. And I'm like, but everyone should know this.
It's like say, okay, do you know who Nintendo? You ever heard of Nintendo before?
No.
Yeah. No, what's Nintendo?
Yeah, that's none of that important. Anyway,
it's important to know who Gabe Newell
is. I was doing
like the whole Tamagotchi.
I'll like leave now. I apparently don't belong here.
Did they make collector cards and player cards back in the day?
Nintendo? Yeah, they did.
Yes, they did.
That was a trading card.
They still do, actually.
No, that was they 1889 or something.
Yeah,
was they initially started, and they had been a company since 1889 making.
But anyway,
player cards.
So okay, Gabe Newell, and so like it was interesting listening to them, mostly because J.J. Abrams was talking a lot about because you have a lack of audience control in movies.
Yeah,
you're able to tell a more concentrated story and a more directed story. Whereas Gabe Newell's comments were just like the exploratory nature of games allow a player to explore and discover more in a game because it's an interactive medium than in a movie where you're directed where to go.
Yeah, and he gave the example of I'm sitting there as the character in Cloverfield filming the Statue of Liberty falling feet in front of me. He's like, if I was in a video game, I would have gotten the hell out of there so fast. I would have gotten in a dodge. But then J.J. Abrams goes, well, you got this scene where you just met all these people in Half-Life 2, and you're sitting here dicking around with the, you know, with the papers over here, and you're not even facing the people that are talking to you, giving you the most important information of the game. Yep. You know, and both of them, like, very, very candidly, but very, you know, friendly banter of like, well, your games do this, and well, your movies don't do this, you know. And it was wonderful. It was great insight for both angles.
Something that I've had discussions about with other people before is that, like, games, movies... are made for an audience.
Yeah.
They're made for someone to sit and watch, where games are made to be experienced. In games, you're not an audience member. In games, you're the main actor.
Or the director.
No,
you know, I would argue that.
Well,
the
it depends on the type of game. But, like, you know, like, in a game where you're controlling a character, you are the actor of that character.
Sure.
You know, and the game's quality is often dependent on how good of an actor you are. Okay? You're given a role. Go do that role. If you can't act, you know, if you can't follow the script, you know, do the button presses at the right moments, you know, make sure you fight these guys, push, you know, do things correctly, you're not going to fulfill the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, cut, okay, end scene, let's go back, start it again. Start from the beginning, go. Okay, cut, we can keep that scene, we got to that checkpoint, all right, awesome, let's move on from there. Okay, that's the movie that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and in Half-Life, when you're just kind of dicking around, okay, you're not being a very good actor. Okay, but that's, I don't know if that's the developer's fault or if that's the player's fault. The problem with gaming's experience is that you are not, game developers are not crafting the entire experience. They can't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because the player has their agency as they're playing. If they want to screw around and do whatever they want and then go, the game isn't fun, well, you're not playing it right. Okay, whose fault is that? I don't know.
So Gabe Newell's keynote kind of addressed this even further, and he said, one of the key things that we made a top priority in every game we've developed, and we made, you know, he uses Half-Life, Half-Life 2 as examples. He says, we wanted to optimize the productivity of the player within game. And he said, Half-Life 1, there was a big decision to be made of when I shoot a wall, what happens? And they, you know, decided on decals that pop up showing bullet holes. And they were just like, we want it meaningful when I do every action in the game. I want to optimize that productivity. If I'm going to produce something like shooting a wall, I want that to be meaningful, and I want that environment to respond to me. And that was the example he used. And he said, and I thought that was a really, it's like, well, duh, kind of thing. But it's a valuable thing to realize how productive is your player during the game. And you know, I would want to argue with Gabe in that scene where it's just like, you know, there's a lot of things that game designers and level designers are doing to coax you and direct you into the right pathways and the optimal ways, but even just, you know, different ways to experience something. But every now and then the story has to be exposed a little bit more. And there's, I don't know, it almost seems like there was nothing we could do at this point to make it more interesting, because we had to sit you down in a room and we couldn't let you leave until you learned about this.
Well, what's interesting is you look at Half-Life and compare that to Portal.
Uh-huh.
And they learned a lot of lessons from that. In Portal, they do lock you in sections and have you listen to things. Okay? Like, you can speed run through a lot of the sections, but you generally can't go faster than GLaDOS is talking.
Yeah. Well, you go, oh man, they timed this so well. Because mm-hmm. you try to sprint to the next section, they finish before you get there.
And Portal 2, some of the Wheatley sections, I didn't care. I wanted to go to the next room.
Oh, really?
Like, I don't play Portal because I want to hear this English accent dude talk about whatever, right?
But he's so funny.
it's funny, right? But it's not necessary to that me enjoying that game.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's like, that's just icing on the cake, right? But the cake is really the best part. If the cake actually tastes bad.
Spoiler alert. Oh, what I'm really good at is spoiling things. Spoiler alert.
That's all right.
But yeah, they've been out forever.
But that's one of the things, is like they're mostly talking about storytelling in games and like with experiences and stuff and that way. But I mean, like I'm one of the people that like is hesitant about that whole thing, because story to me is something that can be taken out of a game and it's fine.
Right. And it stands on its own two legs.
Yeah, and the game stands on its own two legs.
Does the story stand on its own two legs too?
I mean, I think story in most games actually break the game. They like in order to tell your story successfully, you need to break your game, which I think you should never ever do. Like, I mean, I'm gonna throw out names. One of which is gonna invoke the whole thing with the ending, whatever. Like Red Dead Redemption, I shouldn't have died in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believe that my character should not have died.
Was that a spoiler alert? Because I haven't finished that one.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a spoiler alert.
Sometimes you die in Red Dead Redemption. I don't know if you know this.
Like every time you finish it?
No.
Oh.
Not every... Okay. No, it's not...
But
anyways, okay, keep going.
There's a part where it breaks the experience because you are forced to do something where I didn't need to do it.
Right.
Like, there's a ladder going someplace else, and I had Molotov cocktails. There's no reason, like, why can't I use them? Like, I can't use them because you want to tell me your stupid story?
Yeah.
If I wanted a story, I'll go watch a movie. I'll read a book. I'll do whatever, right? Games can tell stories, but don't break your game to do so.
Well, it's funny enough. Now, we were talking about the David Cage thing earlier.
Right, yeah.
As far as when he's talking about... he talks about his stories and games and changing... like, one of the big things he talked about, changing our paradigms. So just for as a Gama Sutra, David Cage put out... David Cage is the CEO of Quantic Dream. Games like Heavy Rain. And he talks a lot about how game development is still stuck in, you know, 10 years ago, 10, 20 years ago. Hmm. Like, over the past 20 years, top games have all been casual games, Nintendo games, and action violent games. And those are your top three every time. It sounds like a, you know, checklist for young adolescent boys.
Right.
You know?
They should all be taxed, by the way.
Yeah, well, that's a whole...
Oh, sorry. Not
too fast.
Too fast, too furious.
Yeah, because of that, he talks a lot about different things that we need to do to change our perspectives on this. It's a great article. You should definitely read it. But changing your game, you know, changing the things the way we've always done it, I think that's a double-edged sword. It's like, I want to tell this story. Like, have you played Heavy Rain?
Yeah, I played. Okay. And the one before then, too. What was it? The Journey thing?
Oh, yeah.
Dream something?
I forget. Whatever. Dreamscape Torment? Is that?
Dreamscape, yeah. I think that's right. Dreamscape is the game that they did with the chick.
Yeah. Anyway, that game, it felt a lot like a big QuickTime event. a lot of times.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I reserve... When he talks about that the game industry should be like more like the movie industry, I cringe.
Yeah.
I cringe inside because the movie industry sucks. Right? like, it sucks right now. Like, yeah, for, you know, if he wants to talk about it like that, like, his idea of the movie industry is not the actual movie industry, yeah. Right? Like, he drops, like, the Cannes Film Festival, and he drops, like, all the evaluation of film from, like, the French side of it, right? The French-Italian. Like,
yeah.
And they look at it as art. And, like, that's why you have movies like, you know, Melancholia and all that stuff that go there and whatever. But at the same time, the movie industry is not that, right?
No.
That does not make the movie industry turn. What makes the movie industry turn is Battleship, Transformers 4. You know what I mean? All these movies. And
but there's
all,
a fourth one?
Hallelujah.
There's going to be a Transformers 4.
Really? With Mikey Mike. But you have... that's what makes it turn. Like, the summer blockbusters, right? Like, and every once in a while, there's a blockbuster that's really, really good because at its core, it's a fantastic movie. Well, and
you look at Fast 5 recently, okay?
Right.
Okay, Fast 5, it's not going to be winning any awards, okay? Because it's not an art film, but it's a good movie.
Yeah,
it's fun to watch. It was interesting.
All the Fast and Furious.
Wasn't it you that yesterday was like, I can't wait to see Fast 6?
Dude, my girlfriend and I,
really?
We've gone to the midnight. We went to midnight showing of like every single one since like when they sort of rebooted it with like Fast Furious or whatever. Fast and Furious
or in Fastier or something.
Oh, not Too Fast, Too Furious.
It's Too Fast.
Oh, right.
Fast and Furious.
Wasn't the one with Chatham?
Tokyo.
No, that's the one with Tyrese.
Tyrese, yeah.
Tyrese came in.
And Paul Walker.
And Paul Walker. They got rid of Diesel.
Which was the dumbest decision.
Did they bring him back?
Yeah,
him back at the very end. So they advertised Fast and Furious 3 by saying, oh, look at Vin Diesel's back. But it was like the last 3 seconds.
Yeah, he's there barely.
He just comes in, he's like, what's up?
Yeah, really. That's what he does. I knew that guy. Let's race.
take David Cage's thing about adolescent thoughts and like violence or whatever.
Yeah.
And Tarantino movies are all violent.
Yeah.
Right? But they're still evaluated at Cannes and
Right? Okay, so like the last we were talking about we weren't talking about this. I was talking about with somebody. What's that movie? Django.
Django
Unchained.
Django Unchained.
Okay.
Oh, I love the hell
which was a great movie, okay? That treated a serious subject as a backdrop for
blaxploitation.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it took a blaxploitation, which is a genre that has ridiculous tropes, and brought it into
a spaghetti western, antebellum
slave movie. Western.
Okay,
yeah.
But if that were a game, how do you think that'd be received?
Ooh, that's a good question.
If it was a game,
Django Unchained, the game. Is that allowed? Is that not allowed?
Oh, I think that'd be a game that causes the argument of, has gaming gone too far? Gaming takes on slavery.
Yes,
all that stuff. Okay. Like, well, that's
but,
all.
But it's not treating it right because it's a game. It's not treating it properly. This is a sensitive subject, and you can't use this in a game. Okay, this kind of violence cannot be put into a game. Okay, because it's a game, therefore it's no longer like movies. It's no longer like novels. It's no longer like any of this stuff. it doesn't, for some reason, we have all this media, and because this is new, it can't be treated the same way. I don't know why. It's a social thing, okay?
Do you guys remember Oprah Winfrey either funded or starred in a movie called Beloved?
Isn't it that?
It's based off of a book, and I hated that book.
It was atrocious. I worked at the theaters.
I just know the hated that dog.
Yeah, and the and like in, within the first 5 minutes, a slave woman gets raped, and there's just a terrible rape scene. And I worked at the theaters. 15 people came the opening night. Like 10 of them walked out within the first 15 minutes. We're like, wow, that must be a good movie. And what if, you know, again, what if that was a game? For some reason, that's an art piece movie that, you know, is tasteful or not, but man, you make that a game and it's
this goes back even into the, like the, what was it, the Fallujah game that was supposed to be coming out a few years back?
There was one?
There was a Battle of Fallujah game.
It was a thing about, the invasion of Fallujah.
And it was supposed to be a very realistic game.
It was made
game.
By Konami.
Konami,
and
that's what it was.
And it was a third party developer.
Yep.
Oh. And essentially, there was enough outcry. Konami canceled the game, and everybody who worked on that game, like, were jobless.
Yeah. It shut down the studio, because they were halfway in development with it.
Yeah.
Okay. But because the outcry, because it's a game, you can't treat this subject with that kind of frivolity.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, I think that's more important. The company that has the balls to do that, to go, you know what, we're going to release it anyway.
Is Rockstar?
I don't think so. Rockstar is too much shit about satire.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Rockstar, okay, that's
Rockstar
fair.
Gets away with, like, all this stuff, and they're touted for their storytelling and all that stuff. I mean, have you guys played Max Payne 3?
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
I could not stand that game.
Hmm.
Like, I thought that was, like, one of the worst games of 2012. But not because of I didn't like the story sucked or whatever, but
the actual gameplay was not great.
Quite literally, they did not, like, for a third game in a franchise I haven't seen in a while, like, the gunplay of Max Payne 1, great. Max Payne 2, they took it to a whole new level.
And no, it was a different development studio. You know,
it wasn't Remedy.
Yeah,
like, I get it wasn't Remedy, but still, it's Rockstar, right?
Yeah.
It's Rockstar. They have this massive pedigree for, they are one of the best studios in the world, like, the best developers in the world. You mean they had Remedy at their disposal to call up Remedy and be like, hey, so what were your mantras when you made Max Payne 2 that made it better? They just peeled back. They basically peeled back and degraded the gunplay to, like, almost the same it was in Max Payne 1. So it's a PS2 games combat system.
Yep.
And then the game actually yells at you for playing, right? Like, I was exploring, and then Max Payne's voiceover is, I don't know why I went over to this bottle. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know. I'm not supposed to be here. We need to get moving. We need to do this. I'm like, shut your stupid face. I'm playing the game here.
I'm Max Payne.
The game can't tell me when I cannot do something. I have the controller in my hand.
If I want to look at this stupid bottle, I'm going to, damn it.
Yeah, like, I have agency. Don't yell at me for playing your game, because I stopped playing the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
I didn't even finish the game because I was like, you're not allowing me to play. Once again, Rockstar is in this whole thing where I am confined to whatever they want to tell me. And if you want to make a movie, make a movie. You want to write a story, write a story. Allow me to play. I can still experience a story through play, right? In fact, if you want to take storytelling to a new level, write a story about my play. You know, like, do it that way. It makes no sense to do it in that way. Like, that's why I think, like, David Cage, for his exact thing,
mm-hmm.
I think he's somebody who is too enamored with telling his own story that he forgets about I'm the player and I'm experiencing it, right? Like, he goes so far into have Heavy Rain lie to you in its narration in order to get his story to come across.
Sure.
Right? Like, I understand the whole importance of, like, an unreliable narrator, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that's locked to a certain medium, and you're trying to bring it over untouched into games and have it, like, and have it just experience smoothly. It makes no sense.
But I think part of that is the experimentation of
I'm like, so glad Heavy Rain exists, right?
Yeah, that's the thing.
I'm so glad it exists,
yes.
Right? But we need to look at it for what it is and say, listen, you can't get away with this anymore, right?
Yeah.
This was a failure from a gameplay standpoint, right? From an there's interactive experiences which are cool, but I don't really consider them games.
Right.
Okay, I haven't played Heavy Rain. I've heard of it. You want to give me an example of what
Heavy Rain? Okay, let's go to the very beginning. Okay, like just not the beginning, like the demo.
Okay,
so this is readily available still, I think. You're playing as this detective, And essentially, you're looking for what's called the origami killer. Okay, some guy who he murders his victims and leaves these pieces of origami. Okay? Well, this detective, he's walking along. He's one of several characters that you're going to end up playing as throughout the game. Mm-hmm. But he's going along, he's looking at things, he's talking to people, and you have to react in certain instances. As you're going down a hallway, a door opens. Do I knock on the door? Do I pound on the door? Do I, you know, that can re...
It's like a point and click.
Yeah, right? It's a point and click.
It's adventure. It's like a point and click adventure game, except instead of like, you know, pointing at your action,
pushing
X. These actions are all around your head, and each action is floating around your head, and they are, you know, inscribed with input.
So yeah. Like Mass Effect's cues, but on your head.
Well, so, you know, Mass Effect's different. Mass Effect, it'll pause the entire experience and make that you choose.
Yeah,
it makes you choose.
This one keeps and run. Real
this
time.
Is constantly moving. So if you miss something, you miss it. It's gone.
Oh, interesting.
Well, which is sort of interesting, but
kind of like Walking Dead, isn't it?
Kind of. That's it. Walking Dead is a point and click adventure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
This one's a little bit more.
This one, it's still similar, mm-hmm. but it's not. The choices are not always as clear, and they're not always as like. I need to make this choice. I need to say this thing that's obviously bad, and to say this thing that's obviously good. Sometimes you push a button and you don't know what exactly he's going to do, because it says attack. Well, okay, and then he runs and like jumps out a window, you know, or something stupid. I mean, that's extreme, but yeah, like he does things that are not very specific. Okay. And when you get into the fights, it's all quick time events. Imagine an entire fight scene played out as Kratos quick time event.
Yeah.
Only you don't know.
The end of Halo.
You don't know. Yeah.
Spoiler alert, Ashley.
That's okay. I didn't like that ending anyway.
But like we got the Halo version of the Death Star trench run, so I was super happy about that. Right?
Kay.
I was super happy about that. I was like, oh yeah.
The what? The trench run?
Halo 4 has its version of the Death Star trench run.
Yeah.
And it was so sweet.
That was probably the most fun I had in that entire game.
Huh. Made Reach's airspace battle look like crap.
Well, that Reach's airspace, I wanted them to put a multiplayer of that. Anywhere.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Like,
no, it would have been terrible, but I wanted them to
Bungie
do it.
Bungie to actually do something original?
Well, that's a whole other thing.
Hey,
they're making another game. It's going to be in space, and it has something to do with Marines.
And it's a shooter. Oh, gosh. No, it has to do with Earth in the future, but everyone's knights.
They're going all out.
They're medieval anyway, space marines.
But,
anyways.
But, like, okay, so but that's, you know, Heavy Rain, it offers a lot of different, and like, things that you do make impact and choices.
Yeah.
Even within the scene. So there's a lot of different little small changes, some big changes, and it's just not reliable. If the game, but it doesn't play as a game. It plays as a, I need to push this button to do this, push this button to do this. It plays as a point-and-click adventure where I need to do quick time events.
So your statement was, this was great, but don't you dare do it again.
Yeah, it's a great. I'm glad it exists, right? Like, I'm glad you experimented with storytelling in a way, but you did it in a way that took my play entirely out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So now all I'm doing is I'm basically watching a movie. It's like imagine you want to watch a movie, right? But in order to go to the next scene, you need to smash on that X button. That's what Heavy Rain is, right?
And you paid $60.
Like, oh, I want to go to the next scene.
And you
want to know what happens.
And you paid $60 for a movie ticket.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like you paid $60 for a movie ticket, and like the story, the narrative, in order to allow, like, in order to basically disguise player agency, or whatever. Because if you mess up quick time events, characters could die, and there was like 11, 12 endings to
it. There was more than
that.
But yeah.
There was a lot of endings, so like characters could die if you didn't do it right. Like in one case, one girl could get like raped or whatever, and like
if the character dies, it just keeps going. It doesn't stop.
It just keeps going. So you can literally not touch a controller in certain experiences. And just watch it, and just watch terrible things happen, right?
Yeah, you watch these characters just get destroyed sometimes.
Wow.
Okay. So, like, it does that whole thing, but again, it boils down to that whole aspect of I'm not playing, right? I'm just experiencing the experience that you've tinkered and tailored with to such an extent that it's kind of suffocating me.
I'm watching a story that I have to push a button to continue.
Yeah.
That's all. Like, imagine having to push
it. Sounds like YouTube.
That
was a good one.
It's good that it exists. Like it's fine that it exists, but at the end of the day, I
want
to play.
There's a reason. There's a difference between games and movies is simply because of the interactivity. If I want to attack somebody, I want to attack somebody. I want to approach a situation that is dangerous. I want to be able to approach it my way and not go, "Wow, you stupid idiot! Why are you doing that?"
Right.
Like I'm the one in charge, not you. You know,
you're the idiot doing that.
Perfect example of something that's done right is Starbreeze's The Darkness. whether it was published by 2K, it was based on the comic book or whatever. Mm. There's a moment in the game where you visit your girlfriend's apartment, and the girlfriend is sitting on the couch, and she goes, "Come sit next to me." You can leave and be a dick boyfriend and just leave. You can do that because that allows you to play.
Yeah,
you can come and you can sit down, and then she's like, asks if she can like go under your arm or whatever, and then she does, and then you can then literally sit down and watch the entirety of the actual movie To Kill a Mockingbird with this virtual character.
Are you serious? The entire movie's in the game?
The entire movie's in the game.
The whole movie. You are kidding me.
I am not kidding you. I love that movie. Like, I love that movie, like, with Gregory Peck and stuff like that. I've actually sat down and I watched the entire movie, like, when I was with that
kid. Is that The Darkness?
That's The Darkness.
Oh, gosh, I remember that.
In the game.
Yeah.
Within the game. I literally sat down and I was like, you know what? Screw it. I want to watch To Kill a Mockingbird right now. And I watched the entire movie within this game, and over the course of time, the girlfriend falls asleep.
Uh-huh.
So you leave to go on, like, this hit or whatever, and you, like, literally tuck your girlfriend into bed before you leave. Now, that's play, right? Like, that's a tailored experience that I can resist, but I can also embrace completely, right? So it allows me to play.
Well, and that opportunity is given to, like, I read an article recently. I read a lot of articles. Where the head of Gearbox, I forget his
Randy
name.
Pitchford.
Randy Pitchford. He's talking about choice in games. It's like, you don't always have to give players a million choices. And sometimes you can give them choices that don't actually matter. Because, like, that choice in Mockingbird, I mean, in the Mockingbird, in the Darkness, however long you stay, it's not going to super affect the characters. It's not going to change a whole lot
of
the game.
But it affects me.
But it affects you as a player. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, the decision he was saying, he's like, in the talk that he was given this, he had two decks of cards, a blue deck and a red deck. Okay. And he said, "Hey, who wants a deck of cards?" And somebody came up, said, "Pick one." "I want the blue ones." "Awesome. Here's the blue ones." He handed me, he left. And he did a magic trick with the red ones. Okay. That choice that person made didn't make any difference to the experience. He was going to do the trick anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. But it made a difference to that person. You know, that individual who made the choice,
right?
That choice matters to him, even though red and blue don't mean anything in the overscore. Okay,
they give you fake choices,
right? And so that a lot of times you're doing that to players, you're giving them a choice, quote unquote. Yeah. Okay, that's not imperative to the actual game, but it's imperative to their personal experience. Mm-hmm. And this comes back to the customization of an avatar. Why is that important? Because this is a choice. It doesn't make any difference in the gameplay whatsoever. But that's my experience.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not your experience. That's not even, you know, that's not even the developer's experience. It's not the person's experience next door. It's mine.
Yeah. You're allowing more play.
Yeah.
You're allowing more play to happen.
All right. So I want to, we kind of touched on why violent games, you know, are prominent or mm-hmm. the top hits, the same way that sex sells, violence sells in movies and in games. Why do you think there's so many Nintendo games that are on that top 10, top 20 list?
I'd say, okay, first off, Nintendo games...
I have a theory that's on the same note that you were just discussing.
For me, okay, Nintendo games, one, they're the oldest... they're not the oldest games, okay? There's the games before that.
Uh-huh.
But they're the ones that most of this generation grew up on.
Okay.
Okay. Strictly the NES was the first system that I had in my house. Okay.
So strictly on reputation, they're in the
top
20.
Not only reputation, but also an IP.
And pedigree.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you go into IPs, you have Pac-Man, okay?
Yeah.
But Pac-Man has never gone outside of Pac-Man.
It's tried.
It tried, yeah. Pac-Man World or something like that. Tried that for a while.
There's some bad ones on
okay?
NES.
And it never succeeded. Mario succeeded.
Yeah.
Mario's done everything. Okay. From racing to flying to going around space to swimming underwater for obscene lengths of time, to racing on carts, to, you know, flying in airplanes, everything. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mario has gone
performing
all over the
place. In the Olympics.
Okay,
yeah,
with Sonic.
Okay, and not only that, the game design for Nintendo games has not changed since the NES. Okay, think of in a typical Mario platforming game. What is the purpose of the game?
Oh, it's always to
save the princess. What is the purpose of a Link?
Well, unless
title?
Like unless it's like, you know, Super
Zelda
Mario
title.
RPG save the or whatever, world. Right?
But even
no, that was a save the princess.
The beginning of it was all to save the princess, and then you find out about the star thing.
I'm always thinking about, like, what's his name? The
Gino?
The bad dude.
The sword?
The star something.
The bad dude in Super Mario RPG.
Like,
oh, I want to kill this dude.
I thought it was a sword. Was the bad guy?
There's a lot.
It's a Geno.
Geno.
That's a Square Enix game.
Yes.
Or a Squaresoft game.
Yeah.
That
used the Nintendo characters.
Used Nintendo characters.
Yeah. I still wish they brought Geno back for something. He's just awesome. Anyway, but because of that, this whole... But, I mean, what is the point of a Zelda game?
Save the princess.
Go save the princess, get a bunch of tools, and use these tools, which are basically keys in different forms, mm-hmm. get through all the different puzzles in the dungeons and stuff, solve and beat the boss, save the princess.
Yeah.
Okay? Every Nintendo release IP has a very similar story, and you go, like, you know, Star Fox is get to the end of these things, fly around, whatever. It didn't change. Star Fox Adventures had the same gameplay, had the same styles, had the same everything. You know, Smash Brothers has had three iterations. It hasn't changed hardly at all.
Oh, I disagree with that.
There's minute changes, but the overall focus of the game is the same.
Yeah, the focus of the game is focus of the game has been switched to Ultra Party mode. Right?
Well, it's fine-tuned, obviously, like into different things. I don't agree with the newest change of adding the slips and the trips and things like that.
Oh, that's awful.
But because of the way the game was designed, it hasn't changed. Right. Like, the actual design hasn't changed much.
Yeah, exactly. Okay? You're still in an arena.
Same thing with Mario Kart.
Yeah, Mario Kart's exactly the same. Okay? And that's why Nintendo games are the same. It's why it's familiar. That's why sequels are the most popular things around. A sequel will sell more than the original every single time.
So, before Nintendo was based on reputation, based on IP, it was relatively new.
Donkey Kong.
Wasn't it successful back in its early days? Its first iterations of Mario Brothers, its first iterations
of Mario
Kart.
It took some time.
Well, Mario Brothers 1, absolutely. Mario Brothers 2, no.
Well, Donkey Kong went through some interesting
changes. We don't talk about Mario Brothers
2. He had his 2D platform.
but that's an example, right? Mario Brothers 2 was not as successful.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. Because they changed the gameplay formula.
Well, you know...
Suddenly, it was a dream sequence.
No, do you know where that came from?
What?
That game was supposed to be completely different characters.
Yeah.
They looked at Mario Brothers 2 and they said... We can't release this outside of Japan because it's way too hard. Put Mario in this other game, and that's why it's just like frogs, turnips. What's going on?
And
you know, so that one's kind of I want to say that one has an excuse.
But that's exactly my point. Okay,
like
because the formula is different.
Yeah,
suddenly it didn't work.
Okay, so
we need to. People love what's familiar but slightly different. That's life.
Well,
give me the exact same thing, only different.
Okay, so here's one of the other arguments, and I don't want to say it's strictly on. Well, everyone knows Mario, so of course that one's going to sell the most. That's almost unfair.
Because well,
if they pooch it, no one's going to like that game. You know,
not really. It'll still sell.
No,
they're far beyond that.
It's like Blizzard, right? So once a company has a high enough pedigree and a rabid enough fan base,
okay,
like you can release
Diablo 3.
No, but even like, so Diablo 3, right? Like, there are certain things that are right about Diablo 3, right? Like, in a dungeon crawler, the foundation of a dungeon crawler is when I click the left, like, the left mouse button, if nothing cool happens, that game sucks.
Yep.
Right? Like, that's the foundation. If I can't constantly click, give me a reason to see cool stuff, but just by the basic left click, then why would I want to see what's with the left, with the right click, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. So Diablo had that really good because it was awesome to see that.
But Diablo 2 already had that really good.
Yeah, right. But right, you know what I mean? Like, but they had that. There's certain aspects that are really good for dungeon crawler parts of Diablo 3. But like I said, Diablo 3 wasn't a very good overall dungeon crawler, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Diablo 2 was better, and not just on customization or whatever, but progression and really like the community and all that stuff. It was really, like, it was, you know, Diablo 2 is much better. But Blizzard can release, like, Blizzard could come out tomorrow and say, hey, we're releasing StarCraft Ghost, the alpha version. And it will sell.
For $60.
It will sell. Dude, it's mind-blowing. I debate, and I love, like, Blizzard is Blizzard, right? But I debate Blizzard's competence sometimes because they're tasked with making StarCraft 2, and they go... We're actually going to make three games in StarCraft 2 is going to be three games. It's like, you're kind of cheating, right?
Like, well, we're going to make three games, and then we're not going to like give hard release dates for any of them. And so whenever we're done with what we decided we wanted to do with this one, we'll release another one.
Like, really? Yeah. Like, just be honest with your consumers. Don't say, hey, if you pay $90, you bought StarCraft, right? Which is what they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And StarCraft 2 still hasn't come out yet. StarCraft 2 Heart of the Swarm doesn't come out yet, which is still considered StarCraft 2.
Yep.
If they had been honest to their consumers and been like, listen, StarCraft 2 is Wings of Liberty, it, that's just base StarCraft 2. And then we're having two expansions that we're already planning and working on.
Yep.
Very honest, very old school way. You're being honest to your consumers. Now I'm kind of debating whether or not you can actually like make a game by itself anymore at all, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of content in Wings of Liberty, right? There's so much. But it's so weird how they went about it. But like Nintendo, Blizzard can release StarCraft Ghost, the alpha version, and it will sell 2 million copies in the first, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yep. Because that base, that fan base is already there, and it's so rabid.
It has the word Blizzard on it, therefore it will sell.
Like Blizzard Dota, right? Blizzard Dota, they're sending a game out to die.
Right? It's
like,
true.
Like, they're sending a game out to die, because not only do they have League of Legends, and Dota 2 is competing with League of Legends, which is already an uphill battle, now Blizzard's just like, oh yeah, we got Blizzard Dota. They're literally inserting their name in it just to be like...
They're just calling it Blizzard Dota?
Blizzard
Dota. Is that really what they're going for?
Yeah.
Because it's Blizzard's Dota.
It's Blizzard's Dota, right?
Okay. So it's owned.
They're sending they're sending a game out, and they're already like embracing the whole Blizzard aspect too, right? The tagline of the game is, coming when it's ready.
Oh, yeah. Come
which,
on!
Which to me means when League of Legends becomes an official esport... Like when League of Legends truly captures your entire market, and then you come out and be like, "Yeah, oh,
where is everyone?"
but that's the same thing. Was like, okay, there's been better kart racers than Mario Kart, but they'll never sell better than Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Okay, in a million years.
Okay. So okay, I've listening to
Mario Kart.
Right.
I'm part of the problem.
I am the problem.
Mario
it's my fault.
It's not changing.
the best one was 64, though.
Well, what's funny is you have an article in here of why Ubisoft thinks that Wii U.
Oh, the Wii U.
And what's funny is the best thing I ever heard someone say is, I will buy whatever console Zelda is put on because I play Zelda.
Yep.
I don't give a
crap.
That
do that.
If Wii U sucks, I've got to play next Zelda.
The Wii
U
doesn't
out.
Suck. This is a whole different conversation.
Well, okay, like,
he's
his opinion.
Theoretically, if
people don't understand how to develop,
I would still buy it.
And people don't understand how to use it.
The Wii U.
It's an interesting concept with the asymmetrical game.
The Wii U just doesn't have a killer app yet. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay, that's its only problem. Okay, like, honestly, it's not that as much as I bag on the Wii U because I don't like the way that Nintendo has done business for the past generation, and so I have a kind of a bias against that kind of stuff. I don't like the way they. The Wii is for family only. You hardcore gamers, screw all you guys. We hate you.
Yeah.
And then we come back in this new generation. Oh, look at all this stuff we're giving for you hardcore. I have this on my PlayStation. I have this on my Xbox. Why should I ever buy your system?
Yeah.
You threw me in the cold last generation.
Yeah.
I have no goodwill for you anymore. Oh, but we have Zelda still. F you guys. I went without it last time. I can go without it again. You got to give me a reason to buy your console.
Yeah.
Okay? And so, like, that's a whole different issue. And that's why this whole Ubisoft thing, Ubisoft's like, oh, yeah, they just don't understand the Wii U. No, you just don't have a good app. You need a reason for me to buy this. Why? Okay, you go through how many people have bought an iPad based on Angry Birds? Okay? It's amazing. The numbers of that. Like, I mean, it's really difficult. You can do surveys and stuff like that. But, like, a lot of people, they play Angry Birds on their iPad.
Yeah, when Angry Birds first came out, it sold a lot of, you know, iPod touches,
and
whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's what that did. I mean, the killer app is always important with any console generation. In the last console generation, Nintendo had it, right, with Wii Sports.
Yeah, that was it.
That was the killer app. You know, Sony didn't have it. Xbox sure as hell didn't have
Xbox had Halo 3.
Well, that wasn't a launch title, right?
No,
that
it wasn't.
That wasn't a killer.
But that's what I mean. It took a while for them to get it. As soon as they got Halo 3, you watched Xbox price or sales skyrocket.
Yeah, it went up. That took, you know, what? It came out in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
It took 2 years, almost 3 years to get Halo 3.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it took a long time. No, 2005, sorry. It took 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years.
It took 2 years for them to get the killer app.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, we're going to do Perfect Dark Zero. Right? They thought that was going to sell so much. And to me, I bought an Xbox 360 for two games that got released technically in their launch window. I bought it for Need for Speed Most Wanted.
That game
was like Fast and Furious the game.
I played that on PlayStation 2.
Like it was on PlayStation 2, but it looked and it played amazingly on the Xbox.
It
made that console sing. And I got Elder Scrolls Oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got it for Xbox because I had an Xbox, and yeah, I had a PC, but I wanted to play it on Xbox because Xbox was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked really good on it, and it looked better than my PC could look on it. Why wouldn't I do that?
Right.
This time around, I like the asymmetrical gameplay, and I might be biased because my thesis game I'm working on right now that I pitched, that got picked, is an asymmetrical cooperative game.
Okay.
So, and everyone keeps on saying, oh, that'd be really good for the Wii U. I'm totally in disagreement because I don't think, the reason why I don't like the Wii U from asymmetrical wise is because only having one gamepad. The gamepad promotes asymmetrical gameplay to a one player, right?
Mm-hmm.
But put it this way, if we're playing a co-op game and I have the gamepad and you have a Wiimote, I own the experience.
Yep.
Right? I own it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't own it.
Right.
Like, the best you can do is have a 1980s Nintendo experience and turn it sideways and do it that way, right? Yep. Or maybe, you know, do like a Mario Galaxy, I'm collecting stuff for you, like, I'm just the pawn and you're the overlord doing whatever.
Yeah, yeah. But there's definitely a hierarchy that happens immediately.
Like, you can tell whose house it is based on who has the gamepad.
It's true.
Right? Like, when you come over and we play a game and the gamepad's whatever, I'm using the gamepad because it's my gamepad. You can have the Wiimote.
Yeah,
I can give you the Wii. I can give you the gamepad. But then for a while, I'm like, I miss the screen. I'm doing nothing. Like, I'm missing the screen. I'm missing the full big controller.
Yep.
Yeah.
The game's interacting with me most, not interacting with you. You're just getting sounds through your little wand. It creates a hierarchy of the experience, which I think is really, really bad,
mm-hmm.
right? Like,
So is there any asymmetrical game that would work with that gamepad?
Okay, the one that I think you could, Dungeons & Dragons.
Okay, that's the one I was thinking.
Right, like, I fully agree that the gamepad is used in a neutral space, right? Mm-hmm. And the gamepad is used as a reference for everybody else. But at the same time, that makes the gamepad's purpose, it's called a gamepad, not a game screen, right?
Right.
So, to me, I'm just like, Microsoft smart glass technology, if they take that in the next generation,
sure.
They go, you know what? We don't care about platform, right? We want all touch interfaces to work with our Xbox.
Yeah.
So now you reversed it on Apple, right? Apple won't play ball by being like, you know, we can make a Microsoft Apple whatever. They won't play ball like that, right?
Yeah. No,
you have to release an app on their app store. It doesn't usurp some of their power, right?
Right.
Which, by the way, I've got an Android phone. I love using it with my Xbox. It is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I use the Xbox app with my iPad.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And I'm just I played Halo 4 and I was just like, I'm going to have, you know, Promethean, it said Promethean Knight, blah, blah, blah. Weakness in the head and shoulders, blah, blah, blah. When it's close to dying, it does this. Okay, cool. Like, now I have like a extra piece of communication with it. Like, everybody loves watching Game of Thrones, the Game of Thrones app, and being like, oh, who is that guy? His name is whatever. He came from this part of Westeros. His father was a blank. And blah, 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 blah. And everyone's like, oh, cool. I know everything about this guy. And now you have like this immediate connection.
That second
with
screen. It's a second screen experience.
The second screen experience. Yes. It doesn't happen with the Wii U, right?
Like, unless you're looking for a one player experience.
Well, even like using the Dungeons and Dragons thing, right? I'd rather use an iPad.
Yes.
Right?
By
like,
far.
I don't want to boot. I'm not buying a Wii U so I can have a second screen experience, right?
The only
because way. I've got three iPads in my family.
Because
already.
I'll just go buy an iPad. I'll buy an iPad 2 refurbished for $300 and the exact same amount of money for a Wii U.
Yeah.
And I have. And when I buy that iPad, I have 2 million apps.
Yeah.
When I buy a Wii U, I have 20 games.
And most they all which, cost way more than any of the ones that I'm buying on iPad.
Most of which are already, like, I already own on my Xbox. So now I have 3 games.
None of which are Pokemon Snap.
Yeah, see, I wanted to go around the room and say, okay, name the game that what's the killer app for Wii U?
I don't know. Well,
it needs to be Pokemon Snap.
Well,
I agree with Ash. I think
Pokemon
Ash
Snap
right.
would be great. But the thing of it is, is that going to sell? I mean, it'll sell one system as well.
It'll sell one. Thank you.
But is it going to sell? Like, is that your killer app? I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not. But
you can't justify to me that, like, that is the reason I need to buy this system is to play Pokemon Snap. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, so Wii Sports worked because you could not play Wii Sports on any other console. Okay. This experience was not available anywhere else. The Move and the Kinect came out later. Okay, mm-hmm. as
to
Sony
try and capitalize on
yes,
that feeling,
but right? they never got it because like the whole point was like this is cheap, it's moving, it's not very good, but it's different from what we've played before. It's a party experience, awesome, and it only cost me $200. or whatever. I forget when released. $300.
I think it was $300 when it released, which was half of what the other.
Yeah, if you look at like the $600 at PS3, I mean, my goodness.
That's why I got a PS3 just now.
Yeah, because now it's $200.
Yeah,
but that's the whole point of the Wii. The Wii U has none of that. Okay, Zombie U, I guess, came out and it's really interesting, but it doesn't do anything that goes. That is, I need to have that experience.
I need that gamepad.
I actually really want to play that game.
Yeah, me too.
But it hasn't made me want to buy it. You guys have a Wii U in here?
Well, they just bought a whole bunch of Wii U games, and I'm like, do we have a Wii U? And they're like, oh, it's coming. And so
they're working on it.
They said it was supposed
God,
to.
God, when that comes in here,
we'll just have to play it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because Wii U has, Zombie U has a piece that's in my game that I want to see how they handle it.
Oh, cool.
First, because I developed it independent from what they did, and I want to see, oh, what's that do? Even though it's a single player experience, I want to play it. You know, I want to do that, and I want to for Killer App. If they did Pokemon with like the Unreal Engine or whatever, they made like a fully true Pokemon game that's like Pokemon's grown up to the big boys, and now it's a full experience.
I was talking with one of my one of the Pokemon guys, Josh. Big Pokemon.
Yeah.
I want to buy X and Y, but I don't want to buy a 3DS.
He was laughing because he's like, we just went 3D. oh, all right. Well, it's been, 10 years past the PlayStation era. It's about time we got into 3D, Pokemon. Hmm. It's good. Thanks for joining
the generation. They had some ancillary games that were in 3D, but they weren't very good.
No.
Pokemon Coliseums.
But nothing that could have been amazing. I thought that the evolution of Pokemon was going to go the Phantasy Star combat system, where like it's turn based, but you have 16 seconds to do your thing, right? So you can actually see the attacks in all their glory, right? A full 3D, fully rendered, beautiful, right?
Yeah.
It'd be like my Charizard and the Seismic Toss. Oh, it is the sweetest thing ever when I do that. And it's just like
that animation is so dope.
That animation is so awesome, right? Because now I can see like the Pokemon battle in all their glory. I don't have to watch like a movie. I don't have to, oh, I'm going to have to sacrifice my own imagination to see how it's good. Because I would buy a Wii U if they did that. If they did fully, like they said, Pokemon 3D.
Yeah.
And it was just Pokemon, next gen Pokemon, and it looked like the Zelda demo that they did the Wii U.
Oh,
thing.
No kidding.
Yeah. And it looked really good.
That Zelda demo.
They'll never do it, and this is why. They still haven't released a Zelda game that looks like their Zelda demo.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, that has never had. That doesn't even look as good as the GameCube Zelda demo.
Oh, but Nintendo's so funny, right? Did you see like they do like a monthly thing? Like they did like a monthly stockholders one with their fans, the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
Now, where Iwata gets up there and he says all this stuff, and he like stumbles in English, and it's like really sad to watch. because you could just have like Reggie Fils-Aimé come out and say it, right? Because you can have a Japanese version and an English version.
Yeah.
Why are you making this poor guy
or get a translator?
We want to, and then really trying to pronounce the thing he can't pronounce. It's like, you're wasting this guy's time. He comes out and he goes, we have three Zelda titles coming up, one of which is a remake. And I'm just like, yeah. So what we did was we decided, we need to make a 3D Zelda game. Let's recreate Wind Waker with our fully HD stuff and just test how it feels. And they did it and they go, this feels kind of cool. All right, let's do it for the whole thing and sell it for a full price. And it was like,
it worked for Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, that was strangely. I was shocked at how well it sold.
The thing is that that's.
I'm not.
But
really?
Ocarina of Time, though.
But what I'm telling
you. That's the Final Fantasy VII of the Zelda.
But
right?
What I'm telling you is. Yeah. Nintendo prints money. Okay? When they make a game that especially is a fanboy game, they print money. It doesn't matter what it is.
Oh, I totally agree. But I'm just laughing. Like, number one, it's a remake. Number two, it's
remake of Wind Waker.
What's funny is Wind Waker is the Final Fantasy VIII of Zelda.
Wind Waker is the Final Fantasy X of Zelda. Right?
Oh,
Zelda. Well, no, Final Fantasy X was like when I was on the PS2. Like, oh my god, this game's so beautiful, and the story had like that really crazy ending where like everybody's crying. Like, there was a lot of people that really, really uptight. All the otakus were crying and something like that. And once you get them crying, like everybody starts crying, right? it's ridiculous. It was they basically said, all right, we need to make an Aerith moment and capitalize on that again, which was Final Fantasy X. And X-2 was like really strange. But it was all about like, okay, everybody loved that character so much, we're going to make a game about bringing that character back to life. Because that's, I wonder if you could do that whole thing. But for like the Zelda thing with Wind Waker, it's just like, I don't know. I don't get it. It's just, it's only it's still relevant, right? It still runs on the Wii.
Yep.
So why am I getting it for the Wii U? Just so I can have it in high definition?
Because,
well, it doesn't change, like, the collisions, doesn't change the gameplay. It's like, we're going to make it better.
Have you seen the video, the comparisons of the Wii's and the HD, and the HD is arguably worse?
That's because Nintendo has not been on the cusp of technological, like, prowess since, like, the NES. SNES, maybe. But Genesis beat it out.
Yeah.
Okay, Genesis had SNES. S64, as much as I love that system, was behind the PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Because the car,
the GameCube was behind the PlayStation 3 and Xbox, mm-hmm. and the Wii was behind both the others.
Yeah.
Like, technologically.
You know what's crazy, though, is that even though the GameCube was, like, relatively behind the, it was behind the Xbox, definitely. I think it was above the PS2 at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Is Capcom made that system sing.
Well, yeah.
Holy hell, the Resident Evil.
That's the reason I started playing those games again.
Mother of God. I played one. Remake,
wow. Great game.
This is so good. Then I played Zero, and I was like, oh, it's even getting better. And then they just, like, pumped out, like, 2 and Nemesis, and all they did was, like, they reskinned, like, the old stuff, and it was awful. Which is sad.
Well, because they didn't remake
it. 4 looked unbelievable, and, mm-hmm. like, okay, 4, I think, like, Pikmin arguably is, like the launch title for the Wii, like, the GameCube that, like, made really big. But to me, when I think of GameCube, I just think of Resident Evil 4.
Hmm.
That's all I think of is Resident Evil 4.
Jeez.
Like, they ported it to PS2 and all that stuff, and, whoop-a-doo.
Yeah, but Resident Evil games were really violent. So violent.
Oh my gosh, no.
Is that a back segue?
That's right.
No, I hurt you a little bit.
You strain yourself on that segue. Speaking of,
I thought about using the microphone wire for nefarious wings.
That's so violent of you. Is that from video games?
To talk about violent video games. Two stories. They are some of the best-selling games of all time.
They're hardcore.
So Connecticut, there've been a few shootings recently. Connecticut.
I can't even, like, respond to that other than just silence.
I know. That's it. It's not a joke. It's just a, like,
I'm not saying you're trying to make a joke.
There's always,
I can't even respond other than just, like,
there's always. This seems like these become more and more prevalent. I wonder how much, you know, this is a whole different topic, but how much the media is involved with this kind of stuff, and how, not involved in the shooting themselves, but, like, in exacerbating the situation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're huge.
And other things. And so that's the whole deal.
There's that.
But Connecticut legislators introduced 2 bills aimed at protecting children from the dangers of violent video games. And so there's a Connecticut video game tax, a violent video game tax, that would go to help fund the education concerning the danger of violent video games. Okay. Number 2, and this is fun. Okay, so there are actually 2 more spaces. The second one was an act concerning minors and violent point-and-shoot video games that would prohibit a for-profit business from allowing a person under the age of 18 from operating a violent point-and-shoot video simulator on the premises of such business. Dang. Which means, essentially, Duck Hunt is against the rules on any for-profit business.
Heavy
okay?
Rain? Heavy Rain's Heavy a point-and-shoot, Rain. Right?
Yeah, it's a point-and-shoot. Okay. Well, so but as soon as that goes in, at what point does this legislation become, oh, that's the limit? That's the line. We're going to keep pushing this line. Any game, does it, you know, we have that whole thing of, like, that it is a humanoid figure, therefore it's violence against a human.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, like, anyway. Okay, the third one was, and the third one is not a law. This is interesting. Bill SB 260, calling for the creation of a task force to explore and identify any links between violent video games and violent behavior in youths. Now, I love that's the third one. Okay? We're going to enact a tax and a ban on point-and-shoots in public places. But then we're going to examine if there's even a link at all. We're going to act first, then research. Okay? I love knee-jerk legislation. Now, this is funny.
Did they learn that from Red Dead Redemption?
Oh! Bam! Okay.
You like that?
But it's just, okay, so that's okay? So this is...
I warned you, no point.
He strikes so hard. Okay, but that's Connecticut law, okay? That's based recently on the, you know... The recent
issues in Connecticut.
Recent issues. Okay. Now, this is Colorado. You may have heard of Aurora, Colorado, recently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do you realize how close Aurora is to Columbine?
It's like
neighboring towns.
It's actually been, like, more, like, Aurora's had, like, multiple shootings.
Okay.
Have they?
So, and this is fun. Okay, so the mayor had, in Aurora, had this whole big deal about having a violent video game tax plan. Okay, this is completely unrelated to the Connecticut thing, but who knows? Anyway, so the mayor, he says, our society is experiencing more and more episodes of violent behavior. At the same time, we see our kids with less parenting and more unsupervised leisure time. Some kids turn to violent video games, which are becoming more graphic and more violent. I believe public violence has many sources, and I'm prepared to accept violent games as maybe one of those sources. In response, a clinical psychologist in Colorado, Dr. Stanton, he's same now, rejected that reasoning, saying, many people who resort to heinous violent acts are already fascinated and enveloped by violence. It's ludicrous to think a game just flips a switch and causes people to go overboard. Millions watch violent movies or play violent video games, and they don't go shoot or hurt people.
Yeah.
Okay? And immediately, and so like just recently, the Colorado mayor, he dropped it.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, it's gone. He's like, he can't support this. Like, and it's funny, I love the counterpoint between these two and with the Connecticut thing is the psychologist who looks at it and has done the research is going, you know what? Let me look at the research that has been done. Oh, there's no connection whatsoever. Versus the politician who goes, I need to do something for my constituents. Video games are the obvious problem.
You know, and I want to be cynical, and I almost want to say, I want to be the governor. You know what would get me noticed in this city, in this state? I'm going to make some video game laws because it's a hot topic right now.
It is.
You know, I hope that wasn't his intent, but
no, it absolutely
I would
was.
Not be surprised. Would not be surprised. I have a good chance for governorship next year in Colorado.
I believe that there are certain people who genuinely believe that video games are evil.
Yeah.
Leland Yee comes to mind because I can't stand the guy. Okay, you know who that is?
Which one?
He's Leland Yee's California senator. He proposed.
Oh, he shot his mouth off a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
he's the guy that like. Oh, he tried to like bring Jack Thompson during the whole hot coffee thing, right?
Yeah,
like he was really for Jack Thompson.
Well, he's the one that pushed legislation that became founded unconstitutional,
mm-hmm. and then he proceeded to say how evil we all were or whatever.
Yeah, and okay. Last week he shot his mouth off and said, "We're not included in this game developers are not." Shouldn't be considered this discussion because they're not a valid problem.
Or yeah.
they're like not valid in this discussion. I'm like, all you have to do is take gamers out and put homosexuals.
Yeah.
Homosexuals aren't valid in this discussion. X minority is not valid in this discussion because we can discuss it without them.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Are you kidding me?
My problem is this is like, The thing that's always sourced is like the shooter mentioned that he played video games, therefore they're a problem. If the shooter mentioned he played football, are we going to ban football?
Yeah.
You know,
no,
are we going to ban basketball? Are we going to ban, you know, like he mentioned that he drives cars. Are we going to ban cars?
So,
you know, he mentioned that he skateboarded. We're going to ban skateboarding.
Do you guys know that like the whole thing with comic books from the 1950s, 1940s,
mm-hmm.
that whole thing,
yeah.
with Comics Code Authority?
Expound on it. I know
so
vaguely.
So in like the 1950s, there's a psychiatrist who wrote a book that was like the Decorruption of the Innocent or whatever. I forget what it's called. But yeah, and it's basically all about comic books corrupting innocence with violence and their graphic nature and stuff like that. They allude to sex, they allude to violence, they allude to lewd crudeness and all that stuff. And this went all the way to, you know, the Supreme Court. And they basically said, you know what? There needs to be a Comics Code Authority of America. So basically it means if you want to make a comic book, if you want to publish a comic book, you need to submit to the Comics Code Authority, and then they're going to go through it, they're going to censor it, return it back, saying you need to change this, this, and this, and this. And I'm talking about change things that were to the point where you couldn't have a dude sweating.
Yeah.
You could have a dude sweating because it connotated grossness, like disgusting, right? Like, they were like, you know, this is like very sexual. It's like, it's a dude sweating because, like, some dude's, like, he's about to lose his job. It's very sexual.
Yep.
They had the whole thing. And then over the course of time, that guy was proven to be, like, the guy who did the study, who wrote the book, crazy.
Yeah.
Didn't have any real proof, all this ridiculous stuff. And what ended up happening was the Comics Code Authority couldn't keep up with the underground comics movement in San Francisco and San Diego.
Yep.
So the guys at the Robert Crumbs and, you know, they started making really terrible, terrible, awful to their standards, which was all about sex and, yeah.
The things you couldn't get in modern comics.
All the things you couldn't get in modern and really disgusting stuff. And some people were like the Diaz brothers, I think, with Love Rockets or whatever. They were making stuff that was really pertinent and contemporary and dealing with real life stuff.
And eventually the comics could have thrown, got, you know, dissolved or whatever, and kind of got, you know, absolved into the FCC a little bit. But they don't really care about comics that much. Yep. But it's like really, really graphic. Then they have to put, like, you know, a readership thing on it, just like books or whatever. So, and this is very, very reminiscent, because every single medium has gone through this, right? Every single medium has gone through this whole thing where this causes this. Jazz music causes violence, right? Like, yep. That was one of the things.
The flappers. 1920s, the
right?
Flappers.
Yeah, it causes violence, right? Yep. And it causes drug use, and it causes excessive, you know, alcoholism and all this stuff. People are coming home beating their wives because they're going to these jazz clubs.
Those jazz clubs.
Yeah.
And, you know, jazz became, you know, banned in certain areas. So every single medium has gone through this whole thing of getting banned or getting censored or whatever. And games hasn't really had its comeuppance yet. And it's kind of seemed like it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
And it's sad to see it, because it's already happening in other countries, right? Like, Australia won't let Red Dead Redemption, I don't know if they've Red Dead Redemption.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But Red Dead Redemption won't be sold in Australia. And they're just like, okay, it won't be sold in Australia, right?
Yep.
And in Germany, right? Germany won't let certain, like, Wolfenstein, I think, wasn't allowed to be sold in Germany or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that whole thing. They can't sell it. Now you can't sell it in Germany, and you can't sell it in Australia. So they have millions of people that can't experience your product.
Well, mm-hmm. Legally. Now, this is the thing that's interesting to me, is that, like, this really... People are so trying so hard to legislate the unlegislatable. Okay? You can't legislate the internet. It's not possible.
Oh, man, I would love to see somebody try.
They are. They're trying so hard.
I know there's SOPA and PIPA and all that stuff, but the problem is, though, is that the people that actually make the internet run and fund it, and they have all these internet businesses, are all just like,
no.
No! Like, look, the whole thing with Google right now, Google has, like, the Gigabyte network that they were like, you know what, we're going to give it to Kansas City for free, and now, like, eBay has opened up a server outlet there.
Yep.
There's so many jobs that have created in Kansas City, and Google's like, yeah. And I'm, you know, being from Mass, this whole thing with, like, the Connecticut guy, it's similar things happening with Massachusetts. So Cambridge, Cambridge, they took a bunch of, like, you know, time crisis games out of, mm-hmm. like, you know, public
rest areas,
and because it was really waste insensitive, or whatever, because some, you know, douche from New Jersey was just driving through and being like, oh, my children, the shootings, this is what's wrong.
This happened just recently?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that one.
It was a few months ago, and so they took it off, and they took all the time crisis games out of the rest areas and blah, blah, blah. But, you know,
instead, we're going to replace them with ticket games so we can encourage gambling and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But Larry Page from Google, for a long time, he's, because, you know, the video industry wants to move into Massachusetts, right? Because Google's there, and, you know, MIT is there, yep. So they have their mm-hmm. program there, and also Northeastern's there, and it's a very big tech area.
Yeah.
But Massachusetts won't give tax breaks to, you know, entertainment software industry, even though there's, like, you know, Irrational Games is in Quincy, Massachusetts, right outside Boston, and they make freaking BioShock, right?
Yeah.
So one of the biggest and one of the best, in according to the storytelling, whatever, the medium, is in Massachusetts. You know, Warner Brothers owns, you know, Games of Needham, Massachusetts, and so on and so forth. There would be so much. People are salivating to get into that whole thing because you're right next to Google, right? Yeah. So now video games are right next to consumer electronics, development companies.
Yep.
And they're right there. So Larry Page is like, listen, we have to do this or else I'm going to take Google and walk. And now Cambridge, MIT, that real estate goes, boom, goes way down.
Yeah.
So he keeps on threatening these things, and all these companies are like, well, if they leave, we're leaving because Google's here.
We need Google.
If you want to shut down,
It's like if Apple left Cupertino, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Exactly.
Apple left Cupertino and left that thing. Facebook wouldn't be in Palo Alto.
Nope.
You know what I mean? Like, they would leave. They would go to, like, Texas or something, or, like, most likely Seattle, right? To the next hipster scarf-wearing area.
They would go to some place where it's dirt cheap.
No.
They go to an establishment, right? They go right next to Microsoft.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You want to go to Redwood right next to Microsoft.
Yeah.
Okay. They want to go, like, you want to, these companies stick together.
Yeah.
You know, Silicon Valley exists for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's all these companies that came together. It's like, we are a group. And you, unfortunately, every time you come up with SOPA or anything, it's like, everyone was in such a panic about this idea. I'm like, it's never going to be enforced.
Yeah.
Even if it goes through, it'll never be enforced. It'll be gone in a month. Because the internet's a wild west that cannot be tamed. You know, you can try all you want. Right? You try as much as you want, but you can't. Like, the whole purpose is, like, the hacker movement and going around underneath.
Hacktivist movement.
Hacktivists.
So, do you think, I mean, we got something with the ESRB, and it was almost like the game industry said, okay, we're going to do this before regulation sets in. We'll create our own ESRB.
Yeah, they had to.
It was do or die.
Yeah, but it fortunately didn't get to the point of regulation. It didn't get to the point where we're actually having to, be taxed or fined on how we sell or distribute our games. But I mean, I understand there's a lot of money in console games, but gosh. Downloaded games and content that's available on internet and Steam.
I love
online distribution is absolutely phenomenal, and it almost breaks the whole paradigm of what the ESRB was set to do, which is, you know, stop you from going to the store and getting the 18 or older game. The kids shouldn't be, I mean, let's just get out of the way. Kids shouldn't be playing this game. It's just the same way as parents buying beer or cigarettes for the kids.
The thing is, it's exactly the same. Because I used to work at GameStop. We were like, you get fired if you give a game to a kid that wasn't old enough. They had to provide ID. When they buy an M-rated game, I mean, if I walk into it's like, hey, I want to buy that game, I don't get questioned.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm 28 years old. it's like, it is okay.
I have a man. I have man pants on.
Well, they just know. But, like, I mean, you know, any kid who looks young, we had the card.
Sure.
You know, and it's like, oh, you're not old enough. Is your parents around? And the amount of times that I sold Modern Warfare to a parent of, like, a 14-year-old, okay, was astounding.
Okay? And the 14-year-old was right there, and the parent's just like, here, take it. Get out of here.
Was right there and didn't care. Okay. Yeah.
My brother had access to me. I'd buy all the games for myself, and he would just play them alongside me. Mm-hmm.
But that's parenting. And the funny part is that we go into legislation, and this is, we're so off topic about everything, but, like, legislation cannot substitute for bad parenting. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's the same as, like, we took sex education out of the home, we put it in the schools, okay? And now it's important, because it's in the schools, and then we have a huge deal. It's like, oh, we're not allowed to teach this. And I'm like, well, you're not going to teach it, so somebody's got to, you know? And so, like, our society, we're just taking all of our problems and passing them off to somebody else. All right. I think, anyway, we could go on with these topics forever.
Yeah, forevsies. Oh, man. I think we got the good ones.
But, like, we don't need all
We're definitely going to split this up into two podcasts.
There'll be more topics left.
There'll be plenty to discuss.
One epic one. Like, you could have, like, Chariots of Fire playing in the beginning of it just to get people ready for the whole thing.
We've tried it, man.
We have a really good theme song.
Our theme song's awesome.
Or you could just get the Inception theme, right? Because anything with Brom is awesome right now, right? Like, every trailer for every major movie is like, Brom.
You know what I should do?
Star Trek, Brom. From J.J. Abrams, Brom.
Well, isn't it the same... Isn't it some song that just slowed down like 100 times?
It is. It's the same song that's on Inception.
That's one song
that they're all in the head.
I can talk about Inception.
Yeah, I know that one's cool.
That is my favorite movie.
Here's what I'm going to try. I'm going to do, just for you guys, I'm going to take our theme song that we have for our podcast, and I'm going to slow it down and see if I can get that Brom moment out of our
It'll take music. It'll take a long time. We had to redo it so many times to get that right.
Oh, dang, man, it. I don't have that much time. So, I'll spend about 5 minutes on it. If I don't get it right, I'll just put in the static one.
Did you see the Superman trailer recently?
Oh, yeah.
Where there was a How It Should Have Ended, where he's like...
Nolan.
He's like,
Nolan?
From the makers of that game that you love, or the movie that you love, that has absolutely nothing to do with this movie, but we're going to put it in there anyway. He goes, like, Batman's in there, goes like, yeah, when it said, like, people really like this trailer. Oh, yeah, when it said from, I was like, Nolan, that's not why people. No, I think it's because you haven't been a good movie since 1980.
I saw that trailer and it was hilarious, but I was like, alright, I'm waiting for this movie to be interesting. and then the kid goes, what was I supposed to just let them all die? And Kevin Costner goes, maybe. I was like, sold. I was like, awesome.
Your dad has questionable morals?
No, because it was awesome, right? Like, because now it's like Superman needs to be scared of humans, which is just like, you need to be careful because you can hurt humans. Now it's like, Pee Wee Hermans are dangerous.
They are dangerous.
In movie theory, kid.
I know. PB Herman is in that movie theater. You take your child quietly out.
Are you kidding me? You run screaming and call the cops.
Oh my gosh.
Wait, what? Was he watching his own movie?
We're going to get sued.
Oh no.
Because I was loving it. He would be like.
And we're done.
Oh man. Oh no. Okay. That was frustrating. All right.
Oh my Thank gosh. You for listening to Confessions of a Game Dev podcast. I found out this week that we actually have 60 listeners consistently in the last
that's
couple.
Awesome.
It was like, whoa, people listen. That's like so.
That's gonna change after tonight.
Every
61.
That's 59. That's
61. We have 42. No, your dyslexic is 24.
But you can get a hold of us if you decide to and not abandon us. At Twitter, on @GameDevConfess, Facebook.com/fate.
Wow.
No, what is it?
Okay, so it's Facebook.com. That's the
slash,
website.
There's a slash.
Slash GameDev.
slash GameDevConfess. And then our email, gamedevconfess@gmail.com. It's all right. These are difficult to remember.
It's a tough night.
You have a website, though, that everybody can get this from, right?
Yeah. Well, no, that's, you just Google game. Dude, if you were listening to this, you don't need to get it.
If you're listening to this, you got this. You understand how to get a hold of us. You're the man.
You're part of the club. You're part of Fight Club. Why there's only 60 listeners is you don't talk about
Game Dev Confessions. No, the rule is, the first rule of Fight Club is a Game Dev Confess Club is talk about it. It's a really good podcast. And tell really everyone you know.
We want everyone to listen to this podcast.
We want
everyone to experience
it.
Oh my gosh. I freaking love IT Crowd.
IT Crowd.
It's so awesome.
This podcast was brought to you by IT Crowd. Go watch it on Netflix this
Oh my
evening.
Gosh, it's
what's,
so awesome.
What's the word game episode? What's it
called? Oh, dang. It's Word Match?
Countdown.
Word Countdown. Street Countdown.
Street Countdown.
A game of Street Countdown.
It's pretty much exactly the same as regular Countdown, but it's in the street.
It's in the street.
It's actually already a word.
We should do a podcast on the street.
It's literally a street podcast.
We should do that. No, I'm serious. You guys should really do that.
I just go walk around and talk to... Hey, you, come here.
You guys should bundle up and be really cold in the snowstorm. And actually, like, just like trying to get through the snowstorm all bundled up. You should ask some questions about video games. Like, hey, like, what do you think about games being tagged? Oh, he's gone.
Oh. I guess he didn't want to. He doesn't care, I guess. He's not a gamer.
I mean, if you guys endured that for like 2 hours.
Nope.
You endured it for 2 hours and you came back in here and listened to it, and it's just like the wind from the snowstorm.
That's it. Drew's never invited back ever.
You know, that is better than some of the recordings of our podcast in the past.
Some of the non-recordings.
Oh. Ouch.
Anyway, all right. Thanks for listening. This is Brandon Karate.
Spence Buchanan.
Ashley McMillan.
Andrew Witz.
Woohoo! And thanks for listening to Game Dev Confess Podcast.
.com.
.com. Facebook. Face Smashers.
Oh, crap.
MySpace.
Good night.
All right. Thanks.